Blog Talk Radio.
To be here with my partner in crime here. What bank you want to rob?
What
bank you want to rob?
What bank do I want to rob?
Yeah, my partner in crime.
Bank of Canada.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's far enough north where we won't be caught. Oh my gosh! Yeah. That sucks. And they sound like thieves themselves. So, all right.
I want to just welcome everybody.
Welcome everybody to the living room. myself and the wonderful and amazing Mocha 868. I am Jay. Oh. And today we have a special, but first of all, before we get into that, I want to mention that we still have the Prompt Your Partner sign up going, and we might extend that a little bit more. Going to be putting
yeah.
out and advertising and everything like that. So we'll run a normal show next week and take a look at, we'll be discussing the topic and letting everybody know what the topic is here as we go along this week. So really excited about that and excited about everything coming up. But today we have a special presentation that we're going to go ahead and do commentary for. We're going to play each part here. This is by We Are All Gonzo, the talented producer and director. And that's all I got to say. This has been an amazing journey that he's taken us on. What this is called is Never Sleep Again. It is kind of his twist on the Sleeping Beauty tale, but it's like Sleeping
and like
Beauty,
every other fairy
like,
tale.
And every other fairy tale, but it's like nothing you ever heard or saw before. Like I said,
or
the
read.
only thing I can compare it to is Brothers Grimm have teamed up with Quentin Tarantino to bring you something extra special called Never Sleep Again.
The perfect description, actually.
It really is. And as we go along with each part, we're going to stop and we're going to talk about different aspects of Gonzo, what he does in his presentations and everything like that. So,
Yep.
And, we're really excited about
we're
that.
We're getting ready
and
to go into that.
Yep, exactly. So let us hop into number one, and we will discuss a little bit about number one and Gonzo as we go along. So here is the introduction and to Never Sleep Again.
The doors to the Crooked Creek Hay Bale Pub swung open with force, and in walked a lovely dove of a lass, carrying a sheathed sword in one hand, the other motioned for a glass.
What kind of fairy tale animal does a girl have to kiss to get a drink around here?
May I introduce myself? I'm Rumpelstiltskin, and this is Rumpelstiltskin.
It's a joke, creep. Not enough booze, not enough darkness.
No.
She sat at the bar and scoured the crowd, hoping to find the right person, but for now, she'd settle for the right beverage, she thought. The bard, busied by blaring bellows of fellow fairy tale mellows, wallows lost of another path, until he stared at the beauty, mustering the will to ask.
Why are you doing that? Stop. Stop doing that.
Mm-hmm. Me?
Stop narrating what you're doing and what I'm doing.
I'm sorry. I'm a bard. We play merry and entertain, you see.
Are you any good? After the night I've had, I could use a few songs to distract me.
Why, I'm worth my weight in gold, good lady. Gentlemen, over here. We have a customer. One, two, three. For one gold piece, I'll share my hair-raising tale of a girl so fair who wanted nothing overly rare. Just some one-on-one time with a special person in her life, her only friend. Instead, she was caught, found herself in the ties that bound her revenge.
Yeah, I think I heard something similar, but show me what you got, little man.
A story like no other you'll concede to me. Here's a dashing revenge of Sleeping Beauty.
Scarlet gown floated, swift flowing wisp with each new skip, whistling herself the dandy tune while the morning sun fought the waning moon. Strolling and skipping, dense brush hid the danger, but she was always taught never to engage with a stranger.
Little girl, I need help looking for my dog made of candy.
What's your dog's name?
His name is I'm Safe. So just hold my hand and we'll walk around yelling out, I'm Safe! I'm Safe! You first!
Sturdily, her cane came up very quick, caught him dead center of his now blue biscuit.
Listen, creep, I got no time for your perverted ways. If I see you in my path in the future, I'll break more than yours.
I get it. Threat well received. I'm a creep indeed.
The pervert strolled across the plain, throbbing with pulsating pain. Less than a threat was a promise for sure, for none understood the girl under the hood was no regular girl strolling alone in the woods. The twists and twirls of her blonde curls held inside a mind of devious design, little Red Riding up to no good with desires to burn and bury the world. Continuing along, she kept whistling her song while skipping to and fro. Unaware, she had dropped a couple of items from her pack during her attack against the pedo. A cookie and note had drifted down from Red's coat and lightly fell to the ground. Fingers curled round with focused intention, delighted for what they had found. Unknown to Red burned a fury far greater, the kind that stirs into a purr or a growl beyond normal nature. Violent, fantastical dreams only violence seems to cure. Someone was watching Red stroll through the woods with eyes both fierce and demure.
See you soon, Red.
First of all, how he sets up his stories is phenomenal. He precurses, makes you think, and puts the little these little spins in there that make you wonder exactly what's going on, which I love. You know, he puts in a little bit of reality, a little bit of life, and then he also makes you wonder, you know, whose character is what.
Yeah, he's really, really done a wonderful job with this intro. This was a great way off the story. And the introduction of the bard, who is traditionally the storyteller in these sort of medieval settings, the sort of story within story setup where she walks into the bar and the bard's telling a story, then she interrupts his previous story and come out, tell a different one, tell a better one. And he starts telling the story, and the story that he starts telling ends up being the story that we listen to throughout most of the series. So actually, you sort of almost completely forget that the bard is the one telling you the story to begin with, because we go so deep into it with all these different characters and the different voices. The kids did such a great job with the voiceovers. Honestly, it gets me every time.
It really does. And yeah, like I said, I even like the way that he puts, you know, almost a reality spin on that. You know, he hits the stranger danger moment there with the guy trying to hold her hand looking for the dog.
And the dog's name being I'm Safe.
I am safe. I am safe. Here, why don't you do it first?
Honestly, I don't know what made him think this would work, because honestly, if I saw a little child sitting around yelling, I'm safe, like, I would immediately believe that they are not safe. Because
no kidding.
Because the child goes around yelling that I was like, no, what's that?
I agree with that. Well, what we have is we have a foretelling of what's going to happen next, and we're going to find out who is actually watching Red. So who? What I really love is who is the main character here? Who's the main character? That's what really got me on this first one. So let's find out in part two.
Stupid lock. Always sticks. There we go.
Sure, I'm just in the back. We aren't open for another 30 minutes. You can wait if you want. The ovens aren't even warm.
Sleepy Lock dies with an enemy she despised. Red accurately knocked a tray of half-filled parfait off the counter into the way of the furious Sleepy as Red ran. A quick flick of Sleepy's wrist, a rip, turned the cloak a whip, and gripped Red's lower ankle at a sharp angle, causing her legs to entangle and trip, sending her careening towards the table.
Listen, we can't do this here.
Sleepy did not heed Red's sudden plea as a peachy key to the knee and a soccer kick to the spleen sent Red crashing away through a dirty bagel display.
Enough!
Red shouted with a sick grin as she grabbed a pair of rolling pins and began spiling both between her hands, swiftly swinging nearer to Sleepy's glands. Expert precision as Sleepy reached for her blade from the sheath hidden where the sword had laid, but never fully revealing the blade as Red attempted to evade Sleepy's glaring gaze. Sliding the casing down never more than an inch or two, Red's frustration grew and grew.
You were never this close. It doesn't matter. I'm better.
As the two entangled, strangled in the drama of the moment.
I hate you.
I hate you too. I hate you times a thousand.
I hate you times a million. I hate you times a million.
Anything times infinity is infinity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Grandma stepped off the bus, and no one noticed.
What happened here?
Quickly, they hid their weapons from sight and stood nonchalantly, smiling, polite.
My big goods? The displays are destroyed? For the love of God, no one watered my azaleas.
You know what, Nana? You remember that huntsman?
Mm-hmm.
The one with the axe?
Yes.
He came here hungry this morning, and when I told him we weren't open, he started acting like a big fool. He threw a tantrum and left.
Well, we should call the sheriff.
I already did. Go in the back and get some tea. Try and relax. While I clean this mess up.
The pair stood awkwardly in a stare of doom as Grandma slowly worked her way out of the room, silent, standing, unsure of what to do.
Do you want a cup of coffee?
Sleepy stared.
I'm not going to poison, it's just decaf.
Sure.
Still take a black like you're used to?
Don't act all familiar. We got unfinished business and you know it.
Listen, I know we did you dirty. And I sure heck knows fight ain't over. As long as that little old lady is in that room, you have no trouble from me.
Sleepy nods and sits down.
I'll ask you again. How do you like your coffee?
As the coffee pot shatters beside Sleepy's head, Red slipped the Glock from inside a loaf of bread. Stopped dead in her tracks by several clicks and a few more clacks of cleaving glass and cups sliding off their rack. The silent blade slipped through the counter, looking for Red. Oh, and it found her. Red dropped to the floor with a whine while Sleepy wiped the blade clean on the loaf Red supplied. Someone in the corner? Perhaps danger.
What have you done to my beautiful granddaughter?
I know you may not want to hear it, but that brat deserved it. One day you might want to come find me to finish this. On that day, I'll be waiting.
I swear, day and night.
tonight, I will train my body to become the ultimate killing machine to exact horrific and painful vengeance upon you when you least expect it. Lay awake. Be afraid to blink, for my wrath will be swift and cruel.
Before Granny's revenge would even begin to start, the excitement was too much for her little old heart. Sleepy eyed the establishment and sparked a near candle. Vengeance on the mind of the vivacious, vicious vandal. A spark ignited grease as the yeast burst into flames. Sleepy darted under the door's arch and continued on her way, never turning back to gaze at the infernal blaze of far greater fire burned in her heart, her mission not finished that day. Although a smile crept from beneath the depths where it had once been hidden for quite some time, and a tear, quite weird, ran down her cheek as a memory flashed in her mind.
Prince Charming, do you take to be your lawfully wedded wife?
I do.
And do you take Prince Charming as your lawfully wedded husband?
I'm sorry. Is this a bad time?
Well, there's a couple things that I really, really enjoyed about this part. First of all, the sound effects that he puts with the music. This is where I came up with this Quentin Tarantino fact of how Quentin Tarantino uses the background music to amplify the actual scenes themselves. When all of a sudden their eyes locked and going, woo, woo, woo. You know, it just made you just sit up and take a look at and listen to the whole thing even closer.
What I love are the smaller sound effects. Score. I love music and everything. But my favorite part is like, okay, so when Sleepy stabs Red, like, through the counter, and he says that Red to the floor was fine, you actually hear, like, little whine from the voice actor, and, like, you can kind of hear, I don't know if it was, like, the sound of something sliding into the counter before the thud on the ground, but he's literally executed every bit of movement with the corresponding sound. So your visualization helped so much that sometimes you see the entire scene in your head and you don't realize and oh, I saw that with such detail. I saw that so vividly because the sound for it was there.
Not just that. You know, the detail he puts into it is just phenomenal. After she stabbed him, she grabbed a loaf of bread to wipe the blade with the blood off the blade. You know, it's like the little details that go into it.
Yeah, he's really put a lot of thought into it, and you can tell, even if the reader themselves has not constructed or physically their head as they go through it, Gonzo sort of done the imaginary work for you and laid the groundwork out in such a way that by the time you hear, you don't really have to spend too long getting mentally trying to imagine what a bakery looks like. He's already sort of done it for you. You walk in, you hear the little jingle from the bell on the door. you know, and he mentions things that really gets your sensory organs, like smell of the yeast and the coffee and the bagels display. Like, you sort of know what all of that sounds like the tray of half parfaits, you know? So many little details that you don't realize that Gonzo planted in here that sort of subconsciously suggests exactly what to see to look like.
I agree 100%. Well, we now know this was about Sleeping Beauty, Sleepy, and let's see what this is further about in part three.
The cold stone slab sat flat in the middle of the drab, rat-infested death trap. Lay atop Beauty Everlasting, grasping for the next breath, rasping, restrained by drastic wraps of plastic. Distant from the edge of a dream, Sleepy seemed to hear a conversation between one voice beaming with esteem and another muffled voice boasting of their successful scheme.
I'm not awake.
Unconsciously aware, her subconscious needing repair, she herself found her mind bouncing through memories past highlights of her despair.
I'm not happy about this marriage.
I'm ecstatic.
This day means the world to me.
I promise to always be true.
You know, for a night, you're a real Prince Charming.
My place is at your side, forever.
You two are made for each other. Are you sure he makes you happy?
Yes, stepmother.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, my queen.
I'm sorry. Is this a bad time?
Wake up!
Sleepy sprung back to life, sliding her body to the side, struggling for breath while trying to cry. Heartbeat in her ears joined by a glorious ring, supplementing sounds of the outside world, the tone enveloping. Ripping through the passive restraint before a rush of blood, she began to faint. Sleepy flipped her body over. Frightened, she gripped her knees, curled her body, and pulled her legs closer. Shivering teeth were chattering and cracked, too little body fat for heat, so no muscles would relax.
Who said that? Where am I?
Dragging a lifeless body slowly over cracks and stacks of cockroach carcasses as darkness intact revealed only grayscale rock and a door without a latch.
Nothing to fear, nothing to fear. Just your most mystical name, the magical mirror.
Rising tall, standing on her feet, her body snapped, contorting, causing anguish and grief. Falling to her knees, no struggle to breathe, she may have been happy had anger not seeped from her core. Every pore forced her into a sleep. Now her eyes finally opened once more, she could see.
Feeling better?
I remember everything.
Good. Now I have something you want.
What could you possibly offer me, except their lives?
The magic mirror winced his cheek, unique as his eyes brightened wide, bearing down his widow's peak.
How could a mirror know?
Magic mirror.
Indeed the truth, a mirrored private eye, unconventional sleuth. Any surface reflective can be home to said detective, from a coin kept collected to the shiniest silver tooth.
You want to know something really funny? You remember Goldilocks, don't you?
Sleepy could barely contain the rage flowing through her veins.
Of course you know Goldilocks, if I'm not mistaken. She shot you and your entire family with... There's three bears, a girl named Red, Jack. I remember Jack was there.
Hands grasped the framed glass, tearing straps and cracking clasps.
Oh, and the queen was watching. Goldie, that yellow-haired little backstabber and her three fat furry friends who shot your dearly beloved.
Well, they're just below us in the kitchen.
Well, the bears are. She's on her way. If you run fast enough, you might just catch them. Or maybe they'll kill all your loved ones again. Oh, wait!
Sleepy smashed the frame furiously, causing damage quite severe. So much for the mouthy magic mirror.
Oh, no, I'm still here.
Mirror's face scattered across each piece of glass in Sleepy's personal space.
And I'll be watching you.
Give us a good show.
right, this is a great time to bring up his little comedy that he throws into these episodes. Last time it was Grandma kicking the bucket right there at the end when she thinks that great speech, oh, I'm going to get revenge and build myself up. And this time, you know, she breaks the mirror and the narrator says the damage was just too severe. And then the mirror goes, oh, I'm still here. Like he's talking to the narrator, which is great.
I love that the mirror has its own personality. Usually interpretations of the magic mirror in fairy tales are that it's just a sort of lifeless conduit. It's a puppet constantly used for the sake of the larger characters in the story. So giving the magic mirror his own personality and consciousness, will, I think, was a bold and character choice. It really makes the magic mirror more of a character.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with that.
Jamie?
The whole thing about the magic mirror being the character is,
yeah,
you know, it's who the heck is he and what's his motivation? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just dropping out a little bit. I missed a little bit of what you said.
Okay. But yeah, I think you're great on that. There's I'm very interested in the magic mirror because there always seems to be a little more to the mirror than what meets the eye.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the funny thing about mirrors. They're supposed to reflect whoever's in front of them. But if you take the subject away from the mirror and make the mirror stand on its own, who will the mirror be? Or what will the mirror be? It's a concept to think about.
No, you're absolutely right on that. You're absolutely right. Well, let's see if we get anything else on the mirror and furthering the character development, part 4.
Awesome.
Sleepy crept carefully, evading the scattered shards, peeping your head around the corner, checking for lookouts or guards. Down the stairs with haste and stealth, as deftly as the seas move shells, she stopped abrupt in shock and awe.
No way, they're this stupid.
But indeed, a dragon was what she saw. Toes could not have tipped with a lesser click as her slick retreat and crafty feet worked like sweet arithmetic.
Hey, Sleepy!
Back behind the stone-broken pillar, her stomach curdling, her next, she'd be dinner.
I'm just messing with you.
This dragon sleeps and sleeps. It's so depressed and so boring.
Glittering light manifested in bright luminescent refracted, leaving Sleepy distracted.
Pull this pin, then run.
Pin slid and the shackle unclipped.
Running time!
Propelled by functioning quads and sheer terror, she jettisoned out of the immediate area. Round the corner, down the hall, past the three bears, who were perplexed by what they saw. The three bears poked their head out to spy a peek before smoke and fire charred each evenly. The dragon's patience never slackened, nor became complacent while the hallways blackened, continuing to chase the original game, becoming maddened with each failed flame. Sleepy hit a dead end, smacking at the brittle bricks when she turned around and found the dragon was closer than comfort would permit. With no other options left in her mind, she did the polite thing and apologized.
But I'm the one that set you free. Oh, please, please don't eat me.
dragon scoffed and huffed, lifting itself up into the air, taking flight, crashing through the skylights and flying deep into the night. Sleepy was relieved, but realized there wasn't time since she would have to find Goldie and squeeze the life out of her just as demand payment for their crimes.
Okay, where the hell am I now?
Goldie wrapped her luscious locks around Sleepy's throat and began to gloat.
I've been waiting a long time, you know.
Who knew hair was so efficient at stopping air from entering one's lungs and sapping strength from the knees? Sleepy fought and crawled and dragged and clawed and managed to get Goldie off her feet. As Goldie rose, she froze a sad pose as she saw what was laid bare of the three protective bears.
I'm done playing babysitter. You're gonna die!
With a quick maneuver, once again, Goldie laced her strands of hair around Sleepy's neck and hand.
You know, if you keep chewing on your hair, you're gonna get a fur ball.
The mirror's sarcasm was not appreciated, but the mirror's stare at the table was fixated. Sleepy turned and spotted three bowls, grabbing one, but finding it cold, the second lukewarm, no menacing harm, but the third, piping hot, was the just right one all along. Burning a layer of skin on over half of her palm, Sleepy removed Goldie's grin and her chin with the liquid napalm. Even as Goldie screamed, a tear never fell from her eye, for the liquid sealed up shut and she could no longer cry. Spastically, she thrashed and crashed along the shelves before unwittingly heading for a window. Mirror unlocked the seventh-tier glass encasement and Goldie soared through, splattering on a garden embankment.
Why did you do that?
I told you, dear girl. I have what you want, and if you play along, you just might have it all.
Sleepy unlocked the door adjacent and headed out through the castle's basement, passing a case in her haste, removing a blade for just in case, unaware her entertainment for the mirror, though it was pleasure sadistically queer, had a deeper story than vengeance for her tragic fallen engagement.
So, evil stepmother, husband and other relative brutally murdered on your wedding day, coma for 5 years.
What?
Sleepy stopped in her tracks, taken aback by this final fact.
I've been asleep for 5 years? 5 years. Son of a...
Oh, those endings always get me. Oh, man. You know, I love what he does with character development. You know, each thing that he brings forward is just a new step in each of these characters as they create it. And there you go once again with talking about the detail of the sound when that dragon goes crashing through the skylight, or when Goldilocks falls down and goes splat. Yes, you do.
And it's really amazing that he manages. Where did he get her? Because we know that he got kids to voice act this. How did he get, did he train them? Did he vocally train them? Because he got, when she falls out of the window, you could hear the distance in her scream. It goes, going downwards. How do you get these kids to do that? I will forever be impressed with these kids, because this is, like, top-tier voice acting, and I don't think anyone has ever, like, studied how to voice act or did any training on it. They just said their lines with passion, and it worked so perfectly. And Sleepy's last line, son of a bitch. I love that. That may have been my favorite line for this entire thing.
Yeah, but the thing, he's right. But my favorite part about it is the son of a beep. The whole thing gets beep. Oh, I love that. That is so great. The way he puts those sensor sounds in there, I love, you know, they're so clever. Like during the wedding ceremony, you didn't hear her name at all. and then you get that that beep in it, and it goes right into the music, which I think is amazing. Now, he says he does the sound effect with the scream, where he's able to fade out. So, you know, him doing the sound effects and just adding that to the sound effects, I think, is amazing.
Yeah, it was. I also love the sort of characterization that he did with Goldilocks and her. Because he gave her this sort of Medusa finish with the hair being, I don't know if it was meant to be alive or if it's just long enough that she uses her hair as a weapon, like rope. But I sort of imagined the Medusa finish where the hair just moved for itself, because, I mean, it's a magic world here. And that worked so well. Like, you know, people always use the bears as the identifying marker for Goldilocks, but it never occurred to me that if Goldilocks were to use an identifying marker herself, it would probably be her hair.
Yeah, you're right. The way I look at it, I look at it as she uses it as a weapon, you know, and because the thing about it is I know that there's a couple old kung fu movies, martial arts movies, that where the ladies actually had long hair and used them as whips and used them to as a weapon. And I think that's kind of where he is grasping a hole in this case. So I'm just like, that's kind of what I grab a hold of. And I think that that is just a brilliant way of doing it. You know, there is actual professional wrestler who's got a braid down to almost her ankles. And she wrestles with that, and she uses it as a whip. And it's seriously, I've seen where it leaves welts on the other women. So it is definitely something that can be used.
Wow. Maybe I need to weaponize my hair. I have long hair. Do I need to, like, put in, like, long braid? I think I went for the Medusa flick because Goldilocks is always portrayed as this sort of cherubic-faced girl with, like, short, curly Sue curls, blonde hair. And so I never pictured her with hair long enough to use it as a weapon. Like, I was faster. If he had said Rapunzel, I would have faster pictured using the hair as a whip because I know for a fact that the hair is that long. But the fact that he said Goldilocks and, like, her three best friends are talking bears or, like, goon squad bears in this case, I went with magic, which just made the whole thing more entertaining for me.
The one thing I looked at in there was when the bears looked out of the hallway to see what was going on, it was like one of those scenes where I could have seen one head going low, one head going medium, and one going high, all looking around the corner at the same exact time. You know, like,
oh, my God, yes, like a cartoon.
Yep, that is exactly what I saw when he did that.
The best part is that, like, just the heads are toasted, just the heads, because all the heads were sticking out. Everybody still looked from the neck down. With just black and that's what I pictured.
Oh my gosh! Because the whole thing is, you know, you can kind of switch between real life and animation in this one, because I don't know if you ever saw the movie Hoodwinked, where they kind of played off of main adult version, a version.
It was
Red
Riding Hood.
Yeah, exactly. And they made it more into an adult version and put all that kind of effort into it. And I think that's kind of how I can see this too. I think he does a great job with this. Well,
Honestly, if the people that animated Hoodwinked were to take this and animate it, it would be amazing.
It really would. I agree with this. Well, it's time for part five. So let's do it.
Let's go.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I could do things my way?
Alone in the forever woods, made of stone and heavier goods, his clever dome home brightly lit, brilliantly shone. Residence of a former scruff, witty, nimble, with not enough food on his plate, so to compensate, he had an overwhelming desire for stuff. At first understood and even admired, until greed took hold, becoming Jack's stronger desire. After struggling through the loss of his mother, he decided no longer he would feel want like another. Inside the shack lay a rather fat goose, overfed with loose tacks, so he could produce golden eggs by the pack. But if it refused, Jack would rack his neck with a noose. Each golden gift the roosting goose left slid a rift between Jack and his royal, loyal pet. At first gentle was the boy with his pleas, bended knee begging he would bow to the swan, but the relationship crippled as time rippled on. Gathering wealth to hoard for himself, he entrapped the quacking rat with no slack to his shelf. Now, with surging prod, the goose itself struggles on, finding no more wishing for Jack to change his ways. Just wishing for a single moment outside of its cage.
Well now, I reckon it's about time you give me the good stuff, darling. Papa needs an advance on that paycheck. Don't make me use something worse. And quit sounding like a chicken. You're a goose. I hate that.
Jack shoved the cattle prod toward the fowl's jaws. It rattled and cawed. Pure agony for the battered bird, treated like refuse, needed an abuse, is how it lived to serve its absurd recluse, not quite the life deserved. Steps ever slipped, creeped outside, quick and nimble, tips gripped a ledge while eyes pried. Each night, Goosey Goose would pray to get loose, but by instinct he cawed when a spine sleepy he saw. Jack gripped the bird like an AK, a pair of wings and a pair of feet in each hand, quite the display, staring eye to eye with the goose while the gooses faced the opposite way. Sleepy burst through the archway. Jack cocked the bird, its head and stomach compressed, expelling, taking a golden egg to her chest. It felt like her lungs had went into a rest as her breast and the rest dropped thoughtlessly through her vest.
Well, well, well. I've been waiting for you ever since I heard you escaped the castle. Pretty little thing like you took one whole week to get to Maine. I'm disappointed. I figured I'd be higher on your list.
Sleepy coughed, ruby red gripping the cloak over her bruised bones as the mirror glared and stared from a window all alone. Jack grabbed Sleepy by the hair and dragged her down the stairs to the outside and then slammed her down on the ground with his might. He reached into his pocket, pulling out something green, and began littering the area with magical beans.
Now watch this.
Jack stood back and spat before her feet when Sleepy found herself at the peak of the 20-foot tree.
Ain't that a sight? These things are damn right magical. Thanks to that goose inside, I can afford a never-ending supply.
She eyed the wide 3-gallon bucket of water overflowing.
I think you know where this is going. Oh, by the way, say hi to the giant up there. You know, before he ripped you to shreds.
Splashing around as roots crashed to the ground, propelling the mound of leafy mass high in the sky. Sleepy found a vine held on for dear life as the stalk swayed side to side and began to petrify. It bent and slammed against an invisible brace, quite loud, a puffy masquerade designed to shroud the location of something both terrifying and beautiful. Sleepy dared to take a step, not knowing where the footings be next. She stood in front of the castle, silent, preparing to battle the hair-raising giant, pearlescent luminescence. The ivory tower stood proud, camouflaged within the mounds of fluffy clouds. Tales from past were told of creatures falling cold to the unforgiving ground, soundly crushed by rage uncontrolled. Tossed down from the blue yonder, leaving a reminder of somber times ended, lost lives ran back, turning into the dust of old. Many armies lay siege to the sky domain, yet its single king remained one and the same. Despite the trebuchets that tossed flaming death towards the sun, never came the day of the giant's reign undone. a creature beyond compare, dangerously skillful and violent. For the first time in many years, Sleepy's hands shook no matter how hard she tried to hide it. With her last ounce of courage and also her sanity, she rushed the broad gates, preparing for a costly calamity. The stress was nothing new, that fear and uncertainty she knew too well. What's left to do but progress through when your surrounding view is already hell?
Oh, this was great. That was the ultimate cliffhanger right there so far. This is the one you're not sure what's going to happen next. And it introduces us to Jack. Jack, that Southern hick, which I love. You know, he throws a bean down on the ground, and then I see him spitting tobacco on it.
Honestly, the image of him cocking the gun and then firing the egg at her chest was crazy. And you know, we never thought about it, but a solid gold goose egg would be heavy, so dense, so to shoot it out at you like a bullet. Yeah, that must have hurt.
I know, and then when you look at Jack's development from being humble and then turning into this greedy bastard who tortures the poor little goose all the time, I think is something, too, that really shows his downfall of the greed, you know, ultimately bringing a hot iron straight to the goose's bill. I think it's a sad state of affairs that kind of plays in real life. It almost falls into that metaphor of people's greed and the corruption that is formed in the greed. I think there's so much more to what's within the character of Jack that really kind of falls into the modern picture.
Yeah, definitely. What I also admire is that we use Jack sort of as a way to set up some lore for this world that Gonzo has created, because he tells this whole backstory of there being an old sword, a giant, and their kingdom, and how the giants disappeared. They never really went anywhere, but they sort of faded into myth because nobody knew that they were still there, you know? Until, of course, this instance where Jack grows the beans and the beanstalks grow, and they sort of hit this sort of invisible barrier that takes them up to the giant kingdom. I also like the suggestion as well that the riches Jack got from Goose what made him able to afford these magic beans. It sort of suggests that magic is available, but also it's available to those who have money and power, and they sort of use it to further supply their power. Very similar to in real life, where certain resources are only available to people who have a certain amount of money. And I liked that parallel that, like, you know, the average man in the village does not have access to magical things. And in order to get magical things, you have a lot of money.
I agree. You know, the first ones he got were out of desperation. If we go back to the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, it's out of desperation. And you see the ones he buys now are out of greed. You know, there's a fine line, I guess, between desperation and greed when you finally pass over from one to the other and you're not appreciative where you came from, and you're more concentrated on where you are.
Definitely, definitely. So many wonderful little details in each version of these stories, in each version of the characters. It really, every piece just paints the world and the setting so much more clearly that you are more and more absorbed the further into the story you get. It's really so well written. I cannot stop praising Gonzo for how much attention to detail he places. When he throws Sleepy down the stairs, you hear the boop, 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 and he tumbles down, and the thud when she finally caught him, it was great.
And is that goose outside your window right now?
Oh my God, my chicken was crazy.
clucking. And you notice he didn't honk until that Brandon iron went up to his face.
It's so funny, right? Because why is it really loud? He's trying to sound like a chicken.
It's almost like the chicken part of it was like a in protest of what Jack was doing. And then Jack was saying, well, if you don't behave and watch and do what I say, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
All right. Time for part six, folks. So here we go.
Automatically, the doors parted way and she stepped onto the floor inside. In Sleepy's mind, she imagined something different. She was perplexed by what she would find. No rending bodies gorged upon. No trace of macabre pawns who failed the murderous marathon. Her hypothesis drawn, but conclusion foregone as she pondered how something was wrong. As Sleepy tapped her feet, clicking sounds of scuffling cleats, she crossed the chalky tiles that surrounded her as she waited by a counter.
hello?
Hi, I'm Todd. Welcome to White Castle. What can I get you?
Is this the mythical White Castle in the sky?
Mm-hmm.
And you're the infamous giant who slays all who come?
It's been so long, I don't even recognize that guy anymore. When that little dude, what's his name?
You mean Jack?
Bingo. When Jack stole the golden goose, I was so furious. And I thought to myself, I had it all that time, you know, all that wealth, and what good did I do with it?
Todd, for the last time, I told you, you're supposed to take your break, scheduled break, 10 minutes ago. Do you know what happens when you take your scheduled break late, Todd? Lisa's break has to be pushed back. Then Julio's break needs to be pushed back. Then Brenda doesn't take her lunch until after the summer rush. Do you know what happens then, Todd? Anarchy, Todd. Anarchy is what happens. This is White Castle. We have a standard. We do not tolerate anarchy at White Castle.
Sorry, Mr. Papadopoulos, it won't happen again. You know, he comes across like a real ball breaker, but he's actually a pretty good dude.
I literally have all the questions.
The giant stood back, and Sleepy heard what had occurred when the giant slept and in Jack crept to steal the valuable bird. He recalled his fateful fall after Jack hastily crawled back down the bean plant to his house he ran before the giant slipped on rainfall. After his injury and his dealings with insurance, the giant was expecting a hefty reimbursement. Unfortunately for the giant, you see, he legitimately forgot to disclose an important fact to those who needed to know. No golden egg taxes were included in his faxes to his humble human accountant, nor added to taxable income. Seems the giant fell prey to a bigger beast that day. The nefarious IRS did what the government does best when money owed is in play. After the loss and the crash of his stocks, the giant filed for bankruptcy, licensing his White Castle to the business White Castle, and applied for work anxiously.
Yeah, after federal tax and stipa, I barely make enough to cover the property tax, but I kind of like who I am right now, and I'm afraid of who I'd become if I had that wealth again. No pity for me seemed to be what he pleaded, as if the comfort of less was exactly what he'd needed. Sleepy saw on his face a sense of peace that had replaced the pacing desire for power and greed. He had found some grace in defeat. For a moment, Sleepy felt jealous. Maybe her overzealous desire to set fire and leave breathless those who had left her restless. Perhaps better sleep was she.
So how do I get down from here?
Employee shuttle. One way up, one way down.
Where did customers even come from?
Oh, we only ever get one.
The giant stretched his finger, pointing towards the terrace. There sat the handsome Neil Patrick Harris.
The time passed and the employees closed shop. Sleepy stood in front of the structure at the twice daily bus stop.
So do you live in the restaurant?
No, I live in the back with my manager, Todd, and the other workers actually sublet the room, so I just sleep on my rug. It's all I got left, but, you know, I love my rug.
So who the hell is the bus for?
Who else? Him.
Neil Patrick Harris, the fairest and rarest of effervescence, ignored the duo's presence. As if called by the sky, he tiptoed a line and headed deep into the clouds, where mysteries would be found.
Mr. Patrick Harris, where are you going?
Wherever God takes me.
Alrighty then. Well, it's nice meeting you. Farewell and good luck.
Sleepy stepped on the vehicle, waiting for the wheels to start turning and get back to the burning revenge and vengeance so alluring.
Hi, I'm Matt. Please keep your hands to yourself, keep them in the vehicle at all times, and no flash photography.
Sleepy sat sheepishly retracing the encounter with the oddly friendly giant behind the vinyl covered counter.
How do you follow the bus route on an invisible road?
I know what you're thinking. Weird. Bussing this guy, but I assure you with the spells we put on this mama, nothing short of a bell rug could hurt us. Yep, this is actually an old convert we repurposed from what used to be a local high school, Sky High. Great school, but hard to drop out of. Yeah, this is a simple route. A peaceful route. No traffic. No pedestrians, no surprises.
As the bus turned, an unnerved Neil Patrick Harris, clearly the fairest, walked in front of the path of the bus unperturbed. The bus ran amok and swerved, finding no ounce of luck as it reached the road's edge and took flight like a duck.
Next stop.
God, this was probably one of my favorite episodes, with all the jokes and the references and the little bit
and Neil Patrick
of,
Harris
and Neil Patrick Harris that I put on the board. There you go. I'm like, gosh, where he came up with that was just absolutely hilarious. I mean, how do you do something like that? How do you bring characters in there like that? That, you know, when you take a look at them, you don't even know why they're there, where they came from. This is the one that you mentioned. Are we on shrooms? Because it's like all these references, Sky High, Neil Patrick Harris, White Castle. Oh, his name is Todd. Oh my gosh. God. And then, you know, question after question after question, you know.
I literally have all the questions.
This one was like one of those ones where it was like, you're really going on about what the hell just happened. And I love it. I love it because it just broadens the whole thing so much.
And the greatest part is that even the characters are wondering what the heck just happened, because Sleepy is just as crazy as the rest of us, but she's just going with it at this point. She's like, well, okay, there's a White Castle in the sky, and Neil Patrick Harris here, there's a bus that drives through the clouds. You know what? I'm not going to question this. Let's just... And let me get to where I need to go.
You know, I
think
it kind of, though it helped her understand where Jack's at, who Jack is and everything like that, and what he turned into. So I think it actually helped her a little bit more listening to what the giant had to say.
It is. It's actually interesting juxtaposition to compare Jack to the giant, who are clearly both at very opposite ends of the spectrum, in their wealth or financial stability is concerned. Giant, who used to have all the wealth in the world, doesn't have it anymore and is actually happier for it now, because he realized what that excessive amount of wealth did to him. Meanwhile, Jack, obviously, is still obsessing over wealth, you know, still trying to milk the goose, for lack of a better way to phrase it.
And do we have to bring up the IRS, all the lawyers, and the insurance? There he is with the details again.
Well, to be fair, there's no IRS insurance in Tobago, I think. Or if there is, I don't think they're as bad as the IRS in the States. So I can't quite remember that one, but I've heard stories.
Oh yeah. The stories are there. All right, let's break into number.
Oh wait, can I make one more point before we start the number seven?
Yes, you
the
may.
The inclusion of Neil Patrick Harris in this sort of suggests that Neil Patrick Harris is a magical creature.
It really was. Wherever God wants to bring. All right, here you go, part seven.
One rich man in ten with a satisfied mind.
Jack sat bare in his wicker chair as his wild copper-colored hair covered skin unaware. All the while, a familiar tune blared in the air. Proud at his action taken, had he been mistaken and become complacent, Sleepy would have sliced him into bits like bacon. Still in his mind, he couldn't find the peace he desired, for he realized the design of revenge would not tire. No body, no murder, no evidence left, but also no way of confirming her death. He wished to be patient, debonair and confident in her defeat, but all he can think is,
she'll kill me in my sleep.
Scared by a cracking switch alerting someone else was there, Jack spied eyes through the glass with a fast blast of the chicken. He cracked the glass and approached with tact and fear.
I saw that. I know you're out there.
Jack spotted Sleepy standing alone in the woods. He fired a second shot to her chest, but it appeared to be no good. Sleepy tactically dodged each egg without a single motion.
Must be a spell or some kind of potion causing this commotion. I swear there's no way you're walking away from this place.
Before firing more eggs indiscriminately every which way, a new image of Sleepy appeared on display. Perplexed and confuzzled, Jack snarled and struggled to stumble out a mumble describing his troubles.
Your ghost. You're just a figment of my imagination. I'm losing my goddamn mind.
Fear coiled in Jack, awaiting reprisals or the specter's denial, but nothing seemed to keep his shattered courage intact. For what Jack saw, if he had exercised discretion, was not Sleepy at all. It was just her reflection.
Hi, Jack.
The magic mirror suddenly appeared on the window facing his way. Realizing his mistake, Jack quickly turned away, but it was too late as Sleepy sealed his fate with a sword to the heart standing inches from his face.
Bye, Jack.
With a flick and a twist, Jack turned into a fountain with such volume an artist could speckle a mountain.
Money.
His unfolded flesh bloomed like a crescent, harsh, such a lesson, but he had to respect it. Sleepy glared at the mirror, expecting some darker reverence.
We're gonna make a lot of money on that bird.
I'm gonna keep a hold of him. I need to make sure he has a proper home with someone that will use that wealth to help others.
Or
Or, and this is a really good serious idea, we could deep fry the little and then we can eat them. And nobody gets any money.
That's fair too.
Sleepy headed out the door as the record skipped its song.
Money can't buy love that's grown cold, love that's grown cold.
So, if a queen dies silently in her castle and no one knows,
is she really dead?
It won't be silent. I can guarantee that.
Unbeknownst to Sleepy, the queen sat in her royal chambers making wagers in her favor behind the political scenes. Elderly and stressed, her brow furrowed from oppressed anger, jealousy, and derangement still quelling over Sleepy's engagement.
She cannot be discovered to be who she really is, as long as that pointless quest of hers keeps her away from the governor's chambers. I see no reason to make her stray the paw.
But my queen, she is already killed
a bunch of useless, overpaid mercenaries. Do you know what the greatest thing about mercenaries are?
My queen?
If they die, you just hire more. I want this place swimming with them. When she does show up, and I know she will, we won't be unprepared.
Yes, my queen.
And as for you, your loyalty has been on question. You will be handsomely rewarded for your services. After you're released from your prison, of course. Only providing you bring her here. Alone and as ignorant as the day she woke. Now, one more time before I slumber. Say it.
Thou art the fairest in the land.
You know, for one of the shorter episodes, there was so much that came out in this one. If you remember when Sleepy was sleeping, when she heard voices, one was the queen, and then one was muffled, and you never found out who that is, and you still have got to wait to see who it is. But, you know, you hear the voice,
yeah,
but you're not quite sure who the voice is. In this one, as the queen's talking, you're not quite sure who she's talking to until you hear that familiar voice that we've been hearing time and time again.
The mirror, which is
crazy. The mirror kind of showed his side of that he's not all the way a good guy. When you talk about his greed wanting to become rich off the goose, and also then, if we're not going to get rich, we might as well eat him. So no one knows, you know? So I think that is clever. I like what Gonzo put up there. The hijack byjack is from The Sopranos. I think that is absolutely phenomenal as well. He puts a little pop culture references that I think are just great.
Honestly, the mirror really may be one of my favorite characters in this. I love the little demonstration of the power of the mirror in this whole situation. Not only is the mirror an informant and an insurgent, but because his power is to control reflections everywhere, you know, usual characterizations of the mirror is it's a single mirror and the entity in that mirror is bound to that one mirror. But this mirror is just bound to reflections, which means he can travel anywhere there is a reflective surface, which reminds me of, I don't know if Gonzo watches this, I know he's into anime, but there's this anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And there's one of the characters that's actually his power, his stand power, is that he can project his self, or he can project his power into any reflective surface. And seeing that done in that show really gives you an idea of how much of a broken power that is, because you can reflect on plastic, if it's shiny enough, you can reflect on water. You can reflect on, like, Jack's window is how the mirror caught him. He doesn't actually need a mirror to project, which means the mirror literally can be anywhere at any time observing anything. That's almost, it almost kind of makes him a god in a weird way, because he's almost sort of omnipresent.
And well, one other thing you got to take a look at with this, with that omnipresence, is he isn't just a reflection. Look at back when he opened the window when Goldilocks fell out of the window. He unlatched it and opened it.
How did he do that? How did he do that?
There you go.
So does that mean he can control and manipulate the reflective surfaces that he projects himself onto? And if that's the theory, then let's say the mirror were to project himself onto a large body of water. Would he then be able to control that water and create waves and drown people?
Exactly, exactly. You know, it's like, I agree with you.
I'm to see how powerful the mirror is as a character.
I think we're going to find out. I do. I think the finale is going to bring it out. But we're going to have to get on to number 8 here. So, here we go.
Please, please, I beg you, if you leave us now, we will run far away and never return. You can keep your kingdom. I just want her.
Well, since you asked nicely, we'll finish you first, so you won't have to wash your feet out.
No, please, I'm begging you.
No need to thank me. Just be my regular cute self.
Oh my god.
Let me guess. Another nightmare.
Sweat and breath under her sheets, bare undressed chills would creep up her sleek neck, denying all relief as she sat in the dark, ironically, unable to sleep. 5 years she slumbered unaware, her number was drawn under heavy sedation for nearly 2,000 dawns. She couldn't yawn without fear, she'd slip back into a snooze and lose another half a decade worth of her youth. To her, sleeping wasn't the only thing left corrupt. She had fits of terror each time she woke up, anxiously wondering the date and time, leaving no rest for her crestfallen mind. Heading out the door to nowhere in particular, she needed air and hungered for dinner. One final stop before her dream of revenge and vengeance at hand would come to an end. She paced through the village looking for a brood to pillage, fully aware of what place she graced, since the queen's castle walls surrounded the place. Stumbling upon a local pub quite unique, she breached the archways through the crooked creek.
What kind of fairy tale animal does a girl have to kiss to get a drink around here?
My oil.
Sleeping Beauty.
Lesson, great.
That's one heck of a story about Red and Sleepy, but I heard it went different.
Well, you know, artistic license, you see.
Well, until we meet again.
Evening, my lady.
Beside Sleepy's stool sat two drunken fools arguing together quite loud about a vehicle from the clouds.
Harold! For the last time, just admit you sold it. Admit you sold it, give me half the money like last time and we could be friends again. You've been telling me the same lie for 5 years. Last year it was a flood, one time it was locusts. Just admit you sold the pumpkin for booze money.
I won't admit it, I did it, not this time.
You're telling me the prize pumpkin we've been working our asses off growing for the Queen's wedding ceremony was destroyed by a flying bus.
Fooling bus. Buses can't fly.
And they don't drive on sunshine either. So how the hell did it fall from the sky?
I don't know. I don't work for the bus company. I don't know their route.
And the bus wasn't destroyed.
Continued on to the next stop.
Someone got out.
Waved goodbye.
So instead of believing that you sold the pumpkin for drinking money, like you have every year for the past 5 years, you want me to believe that a magic school bus from the clouds fell and crushed it. a magic school bus.
We live in a world with talking animals, fairies, hideous giant monsters, and magical plants. And you don't believe in a magic school bus?
Fair play.
My deepest sympathies for your pumpkin.
She finished her grog, put toes to logs, and headed out the front door. Sleepy couldn't quite hide a smile that sneaked a whole mile wide, but inside she knew the time had come true to decide now or never to collect the debt she was due. A whole month to plan and vet, to work them like marionettes, she'd waited long enough since seeking justice on the previous quartet. Almost a month since she'd reawakened, forsaken no more, her steadiness unshaken. Scaling brick and mortared walls, fingers gripped with their awl, for a fall would solve little and perhaps mark her death. But it was the quickest, most direct way to evade and prevent an escape from the queen who'd Sleepy hoped to condemn. Upended, Sleepy slotted, her hands in space allotted, until spotting a fine line of soldiers trotting single file, no time to falter. She knew she stood no chance to a head-on advance, she'd have to play this quietly, so higher she climbed defiantly. Slipping herself over the crest of smoothened window frames and bejeweled headrests, she spotted a closet and headed inside, her stomach had knotted with desire's fiery cries. The queen scurried in and dismissed her men before the mercenaries headed back out to continue patrolling again. Back against the closet, the queen removed her corset, slowly heading towards her chamber's bathroom entry. Sleepy could wait no more, and to the queen's neck she would deposit her blade hastily and intently. As soon as the lock clicked behind, she sprang with vicious murder in mind, hoping to catch the queen unaware while powdering her nose or brushing her hair, bursting through the door before immediately being disarmed, but not by an act of violence. She was felled by an act of charm.
Henry?
Aurora.
The golden vase shattered as Sleepy splattered against the cold stone slabs once more. As Charming knelt down over the battered, tattered Sleepy and whispered to his love, nevermore.
How long has it been?
Now he's gone. I don't know why. Until this day, sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. My baby shot me down.
First of all, he's got a brilliant way to tie things in the past to the present of a story.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to reach back and bring us back to the pub from the beginning to the now, like that it was actually part of the story. Then the two people arguing,
yep,
and the bus breaks their pumpkin, the magic pumpkin that is supposed to, you know, be the carriage that takes Cinderella and everything like that. I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is brilliant.
I think it was for the queen's wedding, actually.
And for the first time you hear Sleepy's name mentioned in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Did
the
you
entire
notice
time
that?
Her name
Aurora.
Was sort of being blurred out. Yeah, I noticed.
Yep.
Gonzo
exactly.
Was saying that he purposefully did not make it known that Aurora was hearing her own name, even when other characters said it. Because Jack said her name. I think Red also said her name. The giant said her name, but it was bleeped out. And Gonzo's explanation for this is that she was focused on the prince and avenging him, that she couldn't even register her own name because, as far as she was concerned, that person had died with him. So she kind of disassociated from that until he said it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you take a look at, even in the wedding ceremony, the name gets blurted out.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I love the callbacks. This was a wonderful, I think this was the episode really that just tied everything right on in and is going to bring us towards the ending really seamlessly. I really think that my favorite part of this was the conversation with them about the pumpkin, because it's so funny and actually believable. It, again, it's reminding me of another set of characters from a different show. Castlevania. In Castlevania, there's a scene in the first episode where these two guys are arguing over a goat and who essentially had sex with the goat. And the pumpkin scene really reminds me of that. They even have the same sort of Cockney English accent, and it's so, so funny, honestly. And Sleepy sitting there and knowing full well what happened to the pumpkin and not saying shit the entire time is what makes it doubly funny. She just gets up and she says sorry for the pumpkin.
I know, that is funny. Yeah, there is, like I said, the twisted humor that's intertwined within this whole story has been incredible.
And then the ending, of course, the twist at the end, the cliffhanger with Henri being alive.
Totally agree. So let's see where this is going to go next in part 9.
Although Sleepy's chance circumstance may make it seem as if her advanced trance-like state could precipitate a semblance of remembrance, she didn't. No thought echoed in her mind for the first time in many nights. She did not dream about her loss. She did not dream about the fight. She did not dream about love at all costs. She just let the darkness swirl inside.
Please, darling, I've waited 5 years. Another 5 minutes simply won't do.
Sleepy's eyes tried to pry themselves wide, but the blood flow supplied was internally denied. She felt the welt dealt develop on the back of her head, and in that moment she felt content to be dead. Queen had snuck behind, taking advantage of Sleepy's shock. Too simple would it be, it seems, to pass through the door unlocked. Luckily, the blow, as dazing as it seemed, only left superficial wounds, and soon she could see. Most in that moment would break down and cry, her mind festering and turbid. Never once did Sleepy wonder why. She only ever asked if he did.
Did you ever love me?
Of course he didn't, you ugly little piglet. He wanted a real woman.
Charming, and the queen's lips pressed for a passionate kiss before starting again, torturing Sleepy's soul far worse than the bullets that pierced her skin. Magic mirrors stared, eyes wincing and furrowed, shining behind the traitorous duo in the glass atop the lofty bureau. Mind racing, pacing memories quite thorough, she couldn't find the words to speak, instead the words she'd borrow.
You can have the kingdom, I just want...
to win, and I win. I won. I took the throne from your naive father, and now I'm giving it to a real man.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, let the guards know about our little visitor, just in case he slips away again. Ooh, and darling?
Yes?
Bring the wine.
You are delectable.
Indeed, my love.
The queen strolled out of the room, closing the door shut, giving privacy to the two. As the fog lifted, Sleepy's gaze sifted for a weapon fate gifted so she could slay her lover twisted. Charming knew her simple plans, so he palmed his hilt inside his hand.
I absolutely love to hate that woman. The second we are married, I'm gonna wrap my hands around her frail, decrepit neck and snap it like a cracker. I see 10 steps ahead, which is why you'll find this room is woefully empty.
Sleepy's disgust and rage ignited.
Please tell me you're not this short-sighted. Do you think the people will celebrate a king who murdered his wife?
No, but they would celebrate a man avenging his lost love.
Charming spoke of his plan at hand, although not grand, would secure himself the land. Suspiciously, a package of great value will be delivered to the houses of prominence, evidence of the queen's involvement in Sleepy's demise, as well as the queen's dreams of dominance. Charming explained with a pained expression.
You awoke and came home to find the queen had married your love. You revealed the ugly truth about what happened. The queen attacked you in a fit of rage, and seeing you die by the queen's hands, your dedicated, loving former suitor, me, would have no choice but to react with violence, especially after the queen manages to finish the job, and, you know, kill you.
Or so they'll think. I grow tired of this oppressive state, and when the people find out how I've been betrayed, they will beg me, bend a knee, be our king.
Inside herself, Sleepy felt something worse, more queer than the mere damage dealt as she struggled to stand. Falling, she knelt, bended knee, as if to beg to the mirror himself.
You seriously knew this whole time?
Sorry, kid. These are the breaks. But it makes any difference. I didn't tell you because...
I just wanted to see the look on your face.
Charming smiled, beguiled by the mirror's cruel tactics, all the while cackling over Sleepy's plan, leaving it lacking.
But, and there is a but.
I also didn't tell the Queen or Charming about our plan.
Our?
You can't be serious. I'm on the eve of becoming king. I have soldiers. I have assassins. I have vast amount of wealth and power backing me. You have a treacherous mirror feeding you lies. And I'm supposed to be afraid? It took you nearly a month just to get caught.
It didn't take me a month to plan this. This is not the plan. There is no plan. Suicide missions don't require a whole lot of planning. I thought you were dead. My plan was to come here for all of this. I wanted it all pulled down, one by one.
Sleepy stood tall, ignoring her aches, cracking a smile as Charming's hand began to quake.
I want to pull it down, brick by brick.
Charming stood aloof with a goofy look upon his face, so Sleepy saved him some grace. She took a step forward in his direction, calmly speaking with a quiet expression. Sleepy's hand stretched across the etched stone gloss that sat atop crisscross stone and chisel designs she had missed more than she could combine.
It's time.
The future king's ignorance was clearly presented by an icy cold stare at the two he resented.
Time for what, your master plan?
Sleepy tilted her head towards the ceiling before a maddening sound sent the mercenaries reeling. A feeling of total loss descended over the castle, even with this army. Charming was not ready for this battle.
I have everything. The crown, the kingdom, the army. What can a pathetic girl like you possibly do to stop me?
Me? Nothing. But she sure as hell can.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you...
Two things in that. I love how he brings a retro feel in his music and how that retro feel just brings us back to that Quentin Tarantino feel. And
I
love that
it
at
really
the end.
Tarantino vibes.
Yeah, exactly. And secondly, once again, he ties an old character from the beginning into the now Bram back the dragon, which I think is just phenomenal.
Yeah,
it was so vague and so something that we never even thought of. You know, it's like something that totally goes out of our mind with the character development of every other character and the situations that come along. And then all of a sudden you get the dragon showing up again.
Yeah, also this is the first mention of the dragon being a she. Now, we can... It's just a dragon. They never mentioned the dragon's gender or anything, but the dragon being a she, I feel, has some sort of significance to the story.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, I'll be honest with you, it reminds me of in Shrek, Donkey and Dragon.
Yeah.
Donkey calls in the dragon right there to help out.
Yeah, it vaguely reminds me of, and now I remember the first time that I heard this one, I think when I realized it was the dragon, and you hear that roar at the end, my poor ears, and I was like, oh, I can't imagine what's happened next. And I really want to know, like, what beef does the dragon have with the queen? Like, of course, they locked the dragon up, but why did they lock the dragon up? And why did the dragon come back? Like, it escaped. It was free. It didn't have to come back. So clearly there's something about this dragon that is significant as a character, and I can't wait to discover it. Oh my god, we're on part 10 already. Yay!
Yes. This is a two-parter, so we're going to have to get through it here. So I'm kind of excited.
Okay.
We got 14 minutes of audio and 10 minutes to talk about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play them back-to-back, and then we're going to talk about them after we play them, okay?
Perfect.
So here comes the finale, part 10, the two-part finale of Never Sleep Again. So let us begin now.
The lush brush surrounded and confounded Mir, who leered at Sleepy, pondering it loud for all to hear.
Why are we walking aimlessly through the woods looking for giant piles of
We're not walking aimlessly. We're tracking.
It came to her on a night after the fright of a nightmare. She suddenly felt very ill-prepared. The fear she carried added so much despair, she hoped it would disappear so she could persevere, but her chances were slim, as she was well aware.
And what happens when we find what we're tracking?
I don't know. Make some kind of deal.
It's gonna roast and eat you.
Maybe it will recognize me.
It recognizes you?
And then it roasts and eats you.
How about we just go back to the castle and ambush the queen? You can easily scale the brick walls.
I'm not going to that castle until I have an edge.
Your edge is gonna roast you and eat you.
Can you seriously stop repeating that? I don't need to hear it right now.
The dragon swooped towards the roasted riverside, carved out a nest in stone between a mountain divide inside of the shined black glass bedding created from its size. Its size obscured by a quiet evergreen forest, Sleepy regretted not plying herself with alcohol until her fear would subside as the moment did warrant.
Okay. So, what now?
Exactly. What now?
I'll try to, maybe if, okay. 1, 2, 3, go.
Oh, you idiot.
Sleepy stepped behind, cover over barren empty tundra laid waste, coated with its slick ebony case that had replaced the glass, the rock, the dirt, making steel a light dessert. The giant-scaled gargantuan made Sleepy feel more human, but she knew a misstep would cause the wrong death and her plans would come to ruin.
Okay, I'll stay calm, and I'll stay calm, and... Hey there, beautiful. Remember me? I'm the one that set you free. Please don't eat me. Why the hell did I say that?
Springing to life and beginning to stalk, singing like a bird, Sleepy began to talk.
Oh my god, it's gonna roast and eat me. I came this on you because I feel responsible for what they did to you. I'm the one who you were guarding in that tower. They kind of put me under a spell where I slept for 5 years so they could stand around and laugh at my suffering. Usual evil stepmother type stuff. But I was just wondering if you could come back with me. And, you know, burn it all to nothing. I'm starting to wonder why I thought you'd understand me.
As catapults and trebuchets soared to breed in every way, the dragon's combative siege against the queen's massive castle was well underway. It sprayed a blaze, turning all ashen gray. A bouquet of death so adept it made stone and melted souffle. No match for the flying monster, most soldiers didn't even bother to mount any sense of offense or defense, leaving trails betraying their honor.
What's wrong with you? She's gonna kill us all!
Exactly.
The dragon's fire was concentrated, however the lack of planning was demonstrated by striking the base of the tower basement, leaving foundations devastated. The floor began to split between Sleepy and Charming, harming the integrity of the structures, parting the room in half while fire continued bombarding. The gap increased with each second, separating Sleepy from her newfound objective.
Once again, you have terrible luck.
Charming departed by darting out of the archway into the hall, while a hail of rubble and rock began to fall, causing the crease to increase by 10 or more feet as Sleepy leapt across the concave concrete, coming close before falling to the floor below. She landed hard on her toes and rolled with adrenaline, blunting the brunt of the blow, running into the hall to see a riot of commotion with mercenaries and soldiers questioning their devotion. Even after spotting Sleepy, they seemed not to care, as if death itself was floating in the air. As Molten Inferno breached the open window, Sleepy barely dove while the mercenaries were too slow.
Hey, this way. I'll get you out.
Hold up. Why the hell should I trust you? You knew that son of a bitch was alive this whole time and said nothing.
I told you I just wanted to see the look on your face.
Sleepy ignored the mayor's queer remark as she headed across the dark, charred floors heading towards an adjacent door.
Okay, listen. I didn't want to be the one to break your heart. Chop, chop, single file, let's get the show on the road.
She dashed down, directed by her shining companion, before the dragon struck again with reckless abandon. A rose-red tornado turning each step to Play-Doh, soldiers caught in their flight, turning riper than tomatoes. Tucking onto the third floor, Sleepy tried to ignore the near makeshift volcano that continued to pour more molten stone across her path, cornering her between a river of death and a wall of glass.
Okay, what have you got? What's your plan now?
Thinking.
Oh god, is that bad?
No. No, I have an idea. Jump out the window.
What?
Jump out the window, aim for the stables, that or vacation in Pompeii.
Okay, let's do this. I'm ready.
Gripping her two hands on the edge of the frame, she launched through the window. The room leapt aflame. The fall was untamed and almost too rough to take. Especially since the stable roof decided to break.
Sleepy, wake up. Wake up. Aurora. Aurora, wake up.
Charming scurried like a rat to the paths of the soldiers who felt like their shoulders were constructed of boulders. Faced with the prospect of being burned alive, none of them were now willing to sacrifice their lives, at least for nothing less than a chance to survive. As powerful as Charming thought he was, he knew the castle was felled. No one knew just how willing he was to leave the queen in that hell. Making his way towards the center well in the courtyard, he was amazed by the destruction he saw. He surely knew one wrong move, he'd be through, so he needed to rally the guard.
Men, will you not protect your king? Are you all cowards?
And what of your queen?
Yes, and what about your queen?
I'm so glad you're alive, darling. I was on my way back with the wine when the dragon attacked. Well, and I almost died.
That would have been a pity.
What?
Oh, we need to exit the city.
Led by the soldiers towards the front gate, Charming and the queen's foul mouths were left agape. Standing amongst debris and singed blackened flora, ready for battle, was hardened Princess Aurora. The queen cackled loud and Charming stood proud.
And what in the hell do you want now?
As the mercenaries began stepping toward a steady stance Sleepy, the sound of pounding fists made the guards feel queasy. Because unbeknownst to the parties involved, the mirror smartly shined to the Crooked Creek pub and the local meat shop and the local beet crop and anything that shined or glistened or gleamed all the way to the swamp and everywhere in between. He spoke in detail to any who'd listen about the truth of the queen and Sleepy's cruel prison.
How the crown failed them and was a cause of attrition.
Before the mayor knew it, a rebellion had risen. As the splintering boards gave way for the doors, as the crowd entered loud, thirsty for blood and holding ground. Sleepy looked around and saw the villagers had taken her side. This was the world she once looked at with pride. Honest creatures of all creeds standing side by side, ready to die to defend what is right. The rebels rushed the guards with chaotic will, thrill-seeking risks giving the queen's men the chills. Spying the two cowards fleeing the scene of the battle, Sleepy chased the queen and Charming up the courtyard of the castle. Before they could make it even halfway, the dragon mid-flight torpedoed toward the tower like a meteorite, leaving the entryway sealed rather tight.
Okay, well, at least we died together, my lord.
Oh, shut up, you useless hag. Don't you have any tunnels or secret passages in this place?
Why are you speaking to me so?
While the two argued out of fire-breathing range, the giant beast retched its breast rather strange. it heaved its chest sharply inwards and out, spouting viscous fluid from out of its mouth.
It's the one chance we've got. Head for the gates. Oh, thank God, I think it's dying.
They did not, for the mighty throat of the mythical beast was simply regurgitating a previous beast. Spewing out from its digestive tract was a knight's suit of armor, fully intact, the mirror watching them both from the shine on the suit's back.
Furball. No, wait. Sirball.
Nailed it. Charming barely spotted Sleepy with its depth of field as he pulled the dress of the queen and used her as a human shield. Hiding behind his forsworn love, the blade slashed across her upper arm, drawing blood. The queen's eyes wide had died inside, no longer fell for the charm of this thug as she pressed him back towards the water well dug.
You traitor! You've been waiting for this moment whole time. You want her to kill me.
No, darling, you slipped.
Preferably, you would kill her, and then he would kill you, or,
did you forget saying?
I'm gonna wrap my hands around her frail, decrepit neck and snap it like a cracker.
Queen lunged her nails at Charming's throat as the two struggled unaware of their approach. She gave one final jolt to the man she previously thought to vote. The two crest the edge of the moss-covered well. A sudden loss of balance at jerking motions propelled the dastardly duo to the fate they befell. Charming's fingers held on to the cracks in between, but he was weighed down by the gown of the queen.
Aurora! You have to get me
How
out of here!
How dare you call out to her!
Aurora! I need you now more than ever!
Sleepy looked down, ignoring his pleas as Charming and the Queen fought each other to breathe.
You really think you're better than me? I know what I want, and I'll kill anyone who dares to get in my way. What have you been doing for the last 31 days?
Living a lie. I don't want to do this anymore.
Sleepy's hands released the blade, at peace with her own decision she had finally made for herself and no one else would dissuade. She pulled the short levers, Charming so clever, quickly moved away from the oak bucket that splayed over the queen's head, knocking her under the waves.
Oh, thank God. Please drown. Please drown. Oh, this day sucks. Stop being dramatic and help me climb up the
you
rope.
You help me up the rope. I'm your queen.
You two deserve each other.
As Sleepy began walking, she found a crowd starting to form as the villagers brought water and fire-suppressing foam to put out the carnage and salvage the throne. The many villagers had overthrown their oppressors while some were discussing the monarchy's successor.
Princess Aurora, we're glad you're alive.
You crush my pumpkin.
Shh. Well, we all agree, and we believe that you, Aurora, you should be our new queen.
You want a queen? She's back in that well, because that's what the throne does to people. I wouldn't trust anyone with it, even me.
Well, what do you think we should do?
I don't know how many great victories you've had, but I have never had one in my whole life, and I sure as hell ain't gonna stand around here talking politics. I want me a pint.
Well, there's no way all these people are fitting inside the Crooked Creek.
You know what? I think I know the perfect place.
I know you. I want you.
Hey, Aurora, great to see you again.
Hi, Todd.
Oh, no way, Goosey Goose, dude. We want 500 Slider Gumballs.
We're here to feast.
Ain't no better feast than the lambs, my friends. So who's picking up this check?
She'll pay. She crushed my pumpkin.
Shh. Hey, let me pay.
It's Neil Patrick Harris.
He's got skin like September rain.
Least I can do.
You know you made my boss solid sky, right?
Don't you?
Yeah, it was a dick move on my part. That's why I'm paying for your meal.
Fair enough.
Todd, seriously, do you think these jokes are funny? 500 slider combos? We haven't made 500 slider combos since we've been Oh, piss my mother's panties.
Hey, check out all the customers, Mr. Papanopoulos. Who's ready for some White Castle?
Run up!
Oh, it's finally here, Todd. Anarchy! Anarchy!
Give me a boost.
With what?
Go underwater and lift me up.
With what?
Hey, you guys know I'm a real type of lassie, right? Chicky Jet here, lickety split.
Why does water have to be shiny?
Shut up, fool. He can help us.
How? He doesn't have arms.
Lassie has arms.
Quiet, you pawn.
He'll tell someone we're down here, and he'll get us out.
Oh, I already told someone you were stuck down here, but I think they're going to let you out.
Oh, is that the son of a...
live the new king.
I guess. Oh, the twists and turns at the end there. I loved it. Oh, my gosh. Let's all go to White Castle.
Yes. I wish we had a White Castle.
Oh, my gosh. This was great. All the references,
it
the tie-ins. The rebellion of the people made me think of, I don't know if you've ever seen the video for the Disturbed song, Land of Confusion, their cover song, where this one hero comes down and the entire armies of the world are going to go after this one guy. And all the people stand up, come out of the woodworks and just start fighting back. It is just, that's exactly what it reminded me of. And there's so much intertwined within this with the flashbacks, the storylines, and then ultimately Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris sponsoring the feast.
I know.
I loved it.
It was a dick move. That's why I'm buying everything. Oh my god! That was amazing.
Oh my god! I love the eventuality of Charming and the Queen getting stuck together, and the very same dragon being the one to take them out. It's a little bit. I was surprised that Sleepy just didn't, you know, go for it, considering that we went through all this time and energy and effort trying to, you know, her revenge. And then when she reaches a point where she totally can, she's sort of just over it. And she sort of just lets the dragon get her revenge instead. Also, I love
that the mirror gets
the last word. The mirror gets the last word in the entire series. And the line being, long live the new king, the irony of that is not lost on me. I'm so in love with the mirror as a character. I want a whole spin-off series about the mirror.
kind of like a spin-off.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're putting things in Gonzo's mind right now. But yeah, I hope.
I love that mirror. I want more backstory on that mirror. Him going to everyone in the village and telling them the truth, sort of like broadcasting it at the same time so that they can get backup. I didn't see that coming. I didn't expect that he'd have that ace up his sleeve or that he was actually going to turn out to be good. Honestly, half of me was like really, really sure that the mirror would stay an antagonist for the story or just end up really revealing himself to be an antagonist or a villain somehow. But that didn't happen, and I'm actually quite happy for it. I'm happy that the mirror ended up being a good guy.
Yeah, it was kind of like a nice little twist. He's kind of like the anti-hero.
Yeah, I love that.
I think everybody loves a good anti-hero. You know, when you take a look at the different comics, Batman, The Punisher, people like that really, you know, they take the law into their own hands. I think of the magic guy from DC Comics. Keanu Reeves played him.
Constantine.
Oh yeah. He is a great anti-hero. And if you haven't seen the Keanu Reeves movie, it's definitely worth a watch.
Actually, one of my favorites because I'm in love with Keanu Reeves. Honestly.
Oh yeah, that's great. I'm sure if he saw you, he'd be in love with you too. Yeah.
Oh, I doubt, but a girl can dream. A girl can dream.
Well, you know what? Gonzo made some of our dreams come true here with bringing fairy tales to life.
Right. Again, like, all of the dialogue was so, so well written. I think by far my favorite line, and this is when the mirror says, Furball, no wait, Sirball, nailed it. Because I immediately, like, when he was describing the dragon retching, I was like, this reminds me of a cat about to throw up a furball, and I love that he actually did make the reference, and so that my visualization was totally correct.
that's another Shrek reference with Puss in Boots. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I'm going to say, Gonzo, we want to thank you for bringing this to us, putting the time and effort into all of these stories. He said, and one thing we have to mention before we go off air is the impeccable rhyming. How hard is it to bring that rhyme scheme into all of this? And not only make it a presentation, but make it into a poetic presentation where it falls into that realm. I think it's just absolutely brilliant. He says he spends way more time writing the scripts than he does manufacturing the audio.
Really?
Both of them just absolutely dynamite. Yes.
That's insane. But it makes sense, because if his script were not so solid to begin with, the audio accompaniment would make no sense, or it wouldn't really enhance it the way that it does now. Honestly, I can't imagine, like, I keep saying that I'm not the biggest fan of rhyming, and I don't like doing it. I can, but I don't like doing it because of how much extra effort it takes. But Gonzo really, really put that extra effort in with doing internal rhymes. Sometimes he did end rhymes. And he did it for 10, well, technically 12 poems, which is insane to me. And not only did he make it rhyme, but he properly set up and described scenes. He fleshed out characters that each had their own unique personalities and that we all loved individually. He did fight choreography with rhyme. Like, fight choreography is already hard to write as it is, using words, but to do it and then make it rhyme at the same time, and he made it funny. Like, he's checked every single literary box you can find for good storytelling, and it's simply amazing that he was able to execute this to the level that he does. I truly believe that there's not a lot of other people like Gonzo that would be capable of doing something like this. It's a whole new format to poetry that I don't think anybody else has ever seen or done before.
Yep. And, well, we got a minute left, and I would just want to say that, Gonzo, once again, thank you for bringing this and putting the time and effort in it. We greatly appreciate you. Mocha,
so much.
A pleasure to be here with you on this morning/afternoon for me. It has been just an awesome time, and for all you do, I just, you know, I'm just gobsmacked at times, and I thank you so much.
Aw, and thank you too, Jay, for always being my rock and my pillar of support. And thank you, Gonzo, for being not just an intrinsic part of, but almost a hallmark of our group now. I don't know what we would do without you. It's so lively here just because you're here with us. And whenever you're ready to start hosting a show, bro, I'm here. I'm waiting.
All right. We are officially off regular air, and we're going to call it a show. Thank you once again. This has been an awesome time. For everybody that's going to be listening on the playback, thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
We appreciate you greatly, and we hope you enjoy this incredible presentation that Gonzo has put together.
Go leave some love on his page. Go share
absolutely
the poem.
All
and
every
go
single
sign up for
every
the
single one of this
your partner contest.
Yep. And every single one of these are on We Are All Gonzo, his allpoetry.com page. You can get the get all of the words found within that.
Thank you.